necessary to develop the disease. Only a limited amount of research on the effects of vitamin C on leprosy and its associated microorganism could be found. As with most diseases not reported to have been treated by Klenner, no studies using his range of vitamin C doses could be found. Indeed, the long-term effects of vitamin C on the clinical course of this disease would appear still to be largely unresearched. Matsuo et al. And Skinsness and Matsuo reported what they termed as only suggestive findings in the treatment of 5 leprosy patients with vitamin C. One received only 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C daily for 4.5 months, and the other 4 received this vitamin C regimen for up to 24 months, along with Dapsone, an antibacterial drug used to treat leprosy. All 5 patients had a comparable amount of lesion regression, with changes in bacterial appearance under the microscope felt to be consistent with lesion regression. When measured by these findings, it appears that vitamin C was able to regress the lesions as much by itself as when added to the more traditional Dapsone treatment. Hastings et al., who further investigated the findings of Matsuo et al., looked at the response of mice that had foot pads infected with leprosy bacteria to variable amounts of vitamin C. The researchers gave the mice doses of vitamin C that were equivalent to a 500 milligram, a 1,500 milligram, or a 4,500 milligram dose of vitamin C in a human. They found that the vitamin C had a statistically significant effect in inhibiting the multiplication of leprosy bacteria when the foot pads were examined after 6 months. Furthermore, they asserted that the multiplication of the bacteria suggested a dose-response relationship, implying that still higher doses of vitamin C could have produced even more pronounced effects. It should also be noted that no bacteria were seen in those animals at 6 months treated with the established anti-leprosy drugs Dapsone, clofazimine, or rifampin. However, with the established safety profile of vitamin C, there should be no hesitation to add it in sizable doses to the traditional therapy for leprosy until more information on the effects of higher doses of vitamin C is obtained. Other researchers have used relatively small doses of vitamin C in leprosy with clinical improvement generally observed. Bocelli reported positive results in over half of the 20 leprosy patients that he treated with intramuscular injections of 50 to 100 milligrams of vitamin C. Gatti and Gauna also noted good results in 2 leprosy patients injected with 100 milligrams of vitamin C for several weeks. Undoubtedly, some of these responses represented general improvements in overall health from the addition of the vitamin C, since the slow growth of the leprosy bacteria would not be expected to directly respond in a very quick or clinically dramatic fashion. In fact, Sinha et al., in studying 70 leprosy patients, found significant reductions in their blood levels of vitamin C. Giving vitamin C to any vitamin C-depleted patient with or without a backdrop of leprosy should show improvements in general health. Some other investigators also found vitamin C to be of benefit in the treatment of leprosy. Ferreira, working with a group of leprosy patients in Brazil, found that daily injections of 500 milligrams of vitamin C were of clear clinical benefit. The patients had an improved sense of well-being, an improved appetite with weight gain, fewer nosebleeds, and an improved tolerance to their regular anti-leprosy medications. Floch and Seru also reported good results using 500 milligram injections of vitamin C over extended periods of time. They also tried using 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C daily and claimed to have still better results. They even suggested that the use of 2 or even 4 grams daily of vitamin C in this disease would be worth investigating. Another benefit of vitamin C therapy in the treatment of leprosy was reported by Sahu and Das. These researchers found that vitamin C was very effective in protecting against clofazimine-induced chromosomal damage in mice. Clofazimine remains one of the important drugs commonly used for very extended periods of time in the treatment of leprosy. Using vitamin C in all leprosy patients would not only address the commonly found disease-associated vitamin C deficiency, it would also protect against significant side effects of the standard leprosy drug therapy. It would appear that high enough doses of vitamin C do retard the growth of leprosy bacteria, and patients clinically improve, at least indicating a stabilization of the disease process, along with some reversibility of symptomatology. Since the leprosy bacterium is in the same family as tuberculosis, and leprosy transmission is so difficult, logic would also dictate that a daily intake of adequate amounts of vitamin C should prove to be just as protective against the primary contraction of leprosy as tuberculosis. Typhoid fever, reversible and preventable, curable, question mark. Typhoid fever is a bacterial disease caused by the bacteria Salmonella typhi. Also called enteric fever, typhoid fever is characterized by prolonged fever, diarrhea, and abdominal pain. Complications can include intestinal bleeding and perforation. Typhoid fever has been almost eliminated in developed countries due to modern sewage and water treatment facilities. However, it still remains a problem today in less developed countries. Also, typhoid fever has a case fatality rate in underdeveloped countries of about 10%, while the developed countries, which have antibiotic therapy and better nutrition, have a case fatality rate of less than 1%. No reports of Klenner treating typhoid fever could be found. Fada treated 18 cases of typhoid with intravenous vitamin C and adrenal gland extract, reporting great success in reducing both the length of the illness as well as the chance of death. Fada noted that the effect of vitamin C and adrenal extract administration is dramatic from the first injection. Shirmai administered 300 milligram injections of vitamin C in clinically severe cases of typhoid fever, achieving a complete protection against the complication of intestinal hemorrhaging. Drummond reported success in the treatment of 106 cases of typhoid fever. The daily dose of vitamin C was 1,200 milligrams, with 400 milligrams given by injection and 800 milligrams given by mouth. Although when this paper was written, the mortality rate for typhoid fever in South Africa was 15%, only two of the 106 patients died with the vitamin C treatment regimen. Furthermore, Drummond commented that the autopsy on these two patients revealed complications to be present, which in no way discredited the efficacy of the treatment. Drummond also noted that there was a demonstrable lessening of toxicity in all but two patients, who turned out to have hyperthyroidism. Not surprisingly, Drummond was also able to determine that vitamin C could kill the typhoid bacteria in the test tube, finding that 50 milligrams of vitamin C added to 5 cc's of a virulent culture would rapidly destroy all growth. Also, no bacterial growth could be initiated in the culture broth when vitamin C had been added to the inoculation ahead of time. Drummond concluded that vitamin C treatment of typhoid fever allowed it to be considered a comparatively safe illness. These results certainly suggest there is an excellent chance that even more dramatic responses could be obtained routinely with much higher doses of vitamin C, as achieved with many infectious diseases by Klenner and others. As pointed out by Stone, a number of different strains of Salmonella bacteria produce significant toxins as well. These toxins characteristically affect the cells lining the intestines, further aggravating the abdominal symptoms that accompany Salmonella infections. Stone further points out that this added toxic component with such infections would make vitamin C an especially good treatment agent, since it has proved to be effective against so many other toxins, bacteria produced or otherwise. Furthermore, even though typhoid fever is responsive to antibiotics, it would be desirable to avoid any unexpected side effects from these drugs by not having to use them. Very likely this goal could be achieved if high enough doses of vitamin C prove to be an adequate single therapy, as seems likely. Hill and Garin reported on the effects of high vitamin levels on the resistance of chicks to typhoid. They found that high levels of all the known required vitamins increased this resistance. They also noted that vitamin C can serve the function of the required antioxidant. Although it cannot be unequivocally stated that vitamin C can cure typhoid fever, there is no doubt that vitamin C can quickly and effectively reverse symptomatology and lessen the likelihood and degree of complications, including death. Klenner-sized doses would likely result in a prompt and complete eradication of this infection. This is especially important in light of the observations of Foster et al. They point out that chloramphenicol, one of the first-line antibiotics used in the treatment of typhoid fever, will often result in the development of anemia in the patient, thereby adding to the total illness burden. Using vitamin C as the sole therapy for typhoid fever would prevent this possible side effect. Furthermore, it would seem very unlikely that this infection would ever be contracted in the first place, as long as adequate daily doses of vitamin C were taken. Malaria. Reversible. Curable. Preventable. Malaria is one of the world's most common infectious diseases, with 200 to 300 million cases every year that result in 1 to 2 million deaths annually. Malaria is caused by microorganisms known as protozoa, from the genus Plasmodium. These microbes typically cause a malarial syndrome when they are introduced into the body by the bites of infected mosquitoes and are subsequently incorporated into the red blood cells. Protozoa are the simplest organisms of the animal kingdom. They are single-celled, and they range in size from visibility by the naked eye to invisibility under the light microscope. Typically, they are free-living, but some types can assume a parasitic existence. In malaria, the protozoa parasitize the red blood cells of the infected human, essentially using these cells as a culture medium to propagate their own life cycles, which results in the eventual rupture and destruction of the host red blood cells. Repetitive infections with these malarial protozoa are also common, since the primary infection does not produce a protective immune response. Recently, malaria has been showing a resurgence due to increasing resistance of the infecting microbe to the drug chloroquine, and due to an increasing resistance of the infecting mosquito to some of the more economical insecticides. Lotza treated malaria patients with injections of vitamin C. Following 300 milligram intravenous doses, he found that healthy individuals excreted about 50% of it in 24 hours, while patients with acute malarial infection excreted very little. Just as with other infectious diseases, this finding demonstrated that the malarial patient uses greater quantities than normal of vitamin C. Lotza also gave 1,000 milligram doses of vitamin C intravenously to his malaria patients. He found that this dose prevented the chills, lowered the elevated temperatures seen with the disease, and improved the overall sense of well-being. He also noted that hemoglobin levels and red blood cell counts were stable during treatment. A hemolytic crisis, or massive destruction of the infected red blood cells, did not occur during the treatment, even though there has been some speculation that this reaction might occur in the vitamin C therapy of malaria. In fact, Lotza commented that vitamin C appeared to have an anti-hemolytic effect on the infected red blood cells. Although hemoglobin levels and red blood cell counts were noted to decline after treatment, this probably represented a healing response more than a crisis response, since the malarial infection can never be completely resolved until all infected red blood cells eventually die and are replaced by newly formed uninfected ones. Abnormal serum protein tests were also seen to normalize on this vitamin C therapy. Other authors also looked at the association between vitamin C levels and malarial infections. Millet observed that inadequate nutrition, along with poor vitamin C intake, led to suboptimal adrenal function. This is probably due to the fact that the adrenal glands normally have very high concentrations of vitamin C, implying an important role of vitamin C in adrenal function. The author noted that a subsequent malarial infection could then lead to a syndrome characterized by the symptoms of adrenal insufficiency. Millet suggested that a closer attention to an adequate diet should be given in the proper treatment of malaria. Krishnan also looked at vitamin C excretion and saturation in normal and malarial subjects in Bengal, India. It was noted that most of the healthy children had normal vitamin C saturation, while most of the malarial patients had a marked deficiency of vitamin C. The author felt that in chronic malaria, there is a subscurvy state that is further aggravated during the acute attacks of malarial fever. Njoku et al. Also noted that the vitamin C levels in the blood of malarial patients were significantly decreased during and after infection. Moore also found that malarial patients demonstrated an increased consumption of vitamin C. He found that the administration of vitamin C, 250 milligrams, along with iron supplementation, accelerated the rate of normalization of anemia seen with malaria. Furthermore, he found that this regimen increased the reticulocyte count, which is an index of the rate of regeneration of new red blood cell formation. Moore stressed that the addition of vitamin C therapy to the traditional anti-malarial drug therapy is appropriate, and Lavander and Age made a similar suggestion. Suggestions that vitamin C should be added to anti-malarial therapy also comes from Das et al. These researchers showed that while vitamin C blood levels dropped in malaria patients, there was evidence of increasing oxidative stress. Regardless of which situation came first, vitamin C is always a logical addition to whatever other treatment is being given when increased oxidative stress and increased free radicals are shown to be present. This increase in oxidative stress in malaria has also been documented by other researchers. Winter et al. Has demonstrated that vitamin C enhances the effect of exophone, an anti-malarial drug used against multidrug-resistant strains of Plasmodium falciparum. McKee and Guyman looked at the vitamin C status in monkeys infected with malarial parasites. They found that the average plasma vitamin C levels in infected animals were less than half the average seen in uninfected animals. Burke et al. Looked at the effect of vitamin C on the ability of mice to resist malarial infection. They gave infected mice daily intra-abdominal injections of vitamin C in a dose of 500 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, starting the injections 5 days before the infection was introduced. These mice exhibited a 38% depression in the parasite count in the blood, and they had a mean survival time that was 67% longer than that of the infected control group receiving no treatment. They gave another group of mice vitamin C injections in a dose of 1,000 milligrams per kilogram, but starting on the same day that infection was introduced. The larger dose of vitamin C was slightly less effective in lowering the blood parasite count, 23% versus 38%, but these animals survived substantially longer. Their mean survival time was increased by 133% over the control group. It would appear that the larger doses of vitamin C needed some time to catch up to the effects of the lower doses of vitamin C, which were started well before the infection was introduced. As revealed by the improved survival times, the clinical response was ultimately much better with the larger doses of vitamin C, even though they were started later. Even more basic research has looked at the effects of vitamin C on the malaria parasite itself and malaria-infected red blood cells in a test tube setting. Marva et al. Found that vitamin C in the presence of copper had a destructive effect on the parasitic growth of Plasmodium falciparum, a microorganism responsible for an especially aggressive form of human malaria. Marva et al. Looked further at the effects that vitamin C has on red blood cells parasitized in malaria. They noted that parasitized red blood cells concentrated 2.5 times more vitamin C than non-infected red blood cells. Furthermore, they found that vitamin C selectively has a pro-oxidant effect inside infected red blood cells, allowing for parasite destruction. In non-infected red blood cells, however, vitamin C has its more typical antioxidant effects of promoting and protecting normal cellular function. It would appear that vitamin C becomes capable of a destructive, pro-oxidant role against the parasite in infected red blood cells because of the increasing amounts of iron released as the parasite proceeds with its multiplication. The right ratio of iron to vitamin C can promote pro-oxidant rather than antioxidant activity. The iron can serve the same function as copper in promoting the destructive effect of vitamin C on the malarial parasite, as demonstrated by Marva et al. Vitamin C can also be an important nutrient in the prevention and effective treatment of a certain malaria therapy complication. Naraki et al. Reported a case of acute blindness after intravenous quinine therapy. Use of vitamin C, vitamin B complex, and steroids ultimately resulted in a complete restoration of vision in this patient. The literature on malaria and vitamin C appears to clearly indicate that vitamin C can help to reverse the clinical and laboratory indicators of a malarial infection. No evidence of either Klenner-sized doses of vitamin C or even of modestly high vitamin C doses was found in reviewing the literature. It cannot be asserted definitively that vitamin C can cure malaria, but the possibility also cannot be ruled out. As with many of the other infectious diseases already examined, the literature is strongly suggestive that a person with a better nutritional status and better body stores of vitamin C would be far less likely to contract malaria in the first place. However, the protective effect of vitamin C in this instance cannot be regarded as absolute at this time. If one or more infected mosquitoes can deliver a sufficient parasite load acutely, malaria will likely be contracted in spite of the individual's vitamin C status. Nevertheless, recovery should still proceed more quickly and efficiently if the victim is not vitamin C depleted. Brucellosis, reversible, curable, preventable, Brucellosis is an infectious disease caused by the bacteria of the genus Brucella. Transmission of the disease to humans comes from infected animals. A common source of transmission is through contaminated dairy products, such as milk, cheese, and butter. Initially, brucellosis presents as a fever syndrome, usually without evidence of a specific focus of infection. Joint and muscle pains are often present. Brucellosis is difficult to diagnose unless there is a high index of suspicion, and the patient lives in an area of the world where such infections are common. The infection, in its active phase, can be located in any organ, preventing a completely typical presentation of this disease. Antibiotic treatment of this disease will shorten its duration and reduce the incidence of complications. However, relapses still occur in many cases, even with antibiotic treatment. The common name for brucellosis, undulant fever, comes from the frequent relapses seen with this disease. Many individuals contract brucellosis as children and have episodic relapses for the rest of their lives. The endemic areas with the highest incidences of brucellosis are in the Mediterranean basin, the Arabic Peninsula, India, and Latin America. Mick reported on the treatment of 12 brucellosis patients with vitamin C. One 35-year-old woman had been plagued with extreme fatigue for about 15 years. She had regular headaches as well as joint and abdominal pains. Every 6 to 8 weeks, she would have a 3-day to 5-day bout of fever, ranging from 99 degrees Fahrenheit to 102 degrees Fahrenheit, during which her chronic symptoms became more intense. After a definite diagnosis of brucellosis was made, and more than 10 years after the initial onset of the symptoms, a 3,000 milligram daily dose of vitamin C was started. After about 15 months, the patient finally reported that she had not had any fever since about 4 months after starting the vitamin C therapy. She claimed to feel better than at any time in the past 11 years, and except for occasional headaches, she reported that all of her earlier symptoms had disappeared. Another 52-year-old man who had been sick for at least 6 years and unable to work for 3 years was also started on 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C daily with no other treatment. He eventually regained about 70 pounds, initially weighing only 129 pounds on a 6-foot-2-inch frame. He became symptom-free and was able to work full-time again. When Mick did not get a good response with oral vitamin C, he would add 1,000 milligrams of intravenous vitamin C 2 to 3 times a week. Only one of the 12 patients he reported on did not have dramatic responses to the vitamin C therapy, and this patient refused the intravenous injections. All 12 patients described by Mick were very ill, and they had been so for years or even decades. Mick concluded that the vitamin C treatment of brucellosis has much to offer. Bora et al. Reported that the levels of vitamin C in the blood and certain white blood cells, monocytes, of 14 chronic brucellosis patients were significantly beneath normal. They also showed that only 15 days of vitamin C supplementation significantly restored some specific parameters of monocyte immune function helpful in combating brucellosis. The doses of vitamin C that Mick used clearly demonstrated that the symptoms of brucellosis and the disease process itself could be reversed. However, it cannot be definitively stated that brucellosis is curable by vitamin C. The prevention of brucellosis by adequate doses of vitamin C seems to be a likely possibility, since the disease symptoms can so readily be reversed on relatively low-dose vitamin C therapy. Unfortunately, no clear data to support this assertion could be found in the literature. Trichinosis. Reversible. Curable. Preventable. Trichinosis is a disease that results from eating raw or undercooked pork containing the cysts of Trichinella spiralis, one of the smallest parasitic roundworms. Once swallowed, the cysts dissolve and the parasite matures. The larvae of the mature parasite then gets deposited in the intestinal lining, and from here the lymphatic system delivers the parasites body-wide, where they can return to their cystic form. Clinically, the patient initially experiences diarrhea, nausea, abdominal pain, and fever. After the parasite progresses past the intestinal stage, symptoms may include pain and swelling of the muscles, sweating, insomnia, swelling of the eyelids, depressed appetite, cough, and profound weakness. Klenner described the case of a 31-year-old male who presented with most of the classical signs and symptoms of trichinosis. Only after the patient recovered did he finally remember that he had eaten raw sausage. Without being specific as to dosage size, Klenner stated that massive doses of vitamin C were given by needle to this patient. At least 5 different antibiotics were given over a 10-day period, during which the patient's condition was observed to worsen. After the patient slipped into a state of semi-coma, para-aminobenzoic acid, PABA, was added to the treatment. He then started to respond well and subsequently recovered. It is unclear whether the PABA also required the administration of the vitamin C to bring about this patient's recovery. Certainly, the patient was sick enough to rapidly deplete vitamin C body stores, and vitamin C therapy on this basis alone would be justified to support the general immune status of the patient. Daoud et al. Looked at the effects of an antioxidant combination that included vitamin C on the course of Trichinella spiralis infection in albino rats. The combination included vitamins A, C, and E, along with selenium. The daily dose of vitamin C was fairly small, being equivalent to approximately 200 milligrams for a 70-kilogram person. Nevertheless, even at this low dose, several significant effects were observed. The authors found that the initial intestinal phase of the trichinosis infection was somewhat enhanced by the antioxidants, presumably because the natural oxidant attack against the parasites was lessened. However, they found that after the trichinosis parasites reached the muscles, the antioxidants, in combination with an antiparasite drug, mebendazole, resulted in the number of larvae in the muscles being highly decreased relative to no treatment. The larvae were also significantly lessened relative to treatment with only the antiparasite drug. Senuteta and Bizulevicus also looked at the effects of vitamin C on the resistance of rats to the trichinosis infection. They administered a daily dose of vitamin C, 50 milligrams, to each rat, which equates to approximately a 35,000 milligram dose in a 70 kilogram man or animal. Relative to infected animals that were not given vitamin C, a higher antibody titer was seen in the infected animals given vitamin C. Most significantly, the vitamin C-treated infected animals had about a 40% reduction in worm larvae count in the muscles after 30 days of treatment. This significant decrease took place with vitamin C treatment alone, since no traditional antiparasite medications were given. Once the initial challenge of parasites has been presented to the intestine and parasite assimilation has taken place, it would appear that vitamin C, as well as other antioxidants, can play a significant role in shortening the course of trichinosis and lessening the acute intensity of the infection. It would also appear that vitamin C would probably best serve as a significant addition to the traditional therapies already in use for this infection, rather than just being used as the sole treating agent. There was no evidence found in the literature to specifically support the assertion that vitamin C would prevent the contraction of a trichinosis infection. As with microbes, enough of an acute challenge to the intestinal tract with cysts of Trichinella spiralis would be expected to initiate an infection in spite of significant amounts of vitamin C being present. Other infectious diseases or pathogenic microorganisms and vitamin C. Amoebic dysentery. Reversible and preventable. Curable? Amoebic dysentery is a disease caused by the pathogenic strain of protozoa, Entamoeba histolytica. This parasite continues to infect approximately 1% of the world's population, with the highest incidence in poor and underdeveloped countries. Symptomatically, this infection can result in severe gastrointestinal symptoms, including inflammation of the intestines that can proceed to ulceration in the colon. Diarrhea containing blood and mucus is common, along with associated abdominal pain. Some patients will go on to develop amoebic liver abscesses. Veselovskaya, using only 150 milligrams of vitamin C daily, found a clear relationship between the severity of amoebic disease and vitamin C levels in 106 patients. Bloody bowel movements were seen more often in the vitamin C deficient patients. Sokolova treated amoeba-infected patients with 500 milligrams of vitamin C daily. Combined with other routine treatments, the patients receiving vitamin C had shorter illness durations and a quicker elimination of the symptoms associated with severe dysentery. Ivanov et al., in looking at 287 patients with amoebic intestinal infections, noted that the disease assumed a fulminant course in 5 patients with evidence of vitamin C and B deficiency. A fulminant course is an extremely rapid, unchecked progression of disease. As with a number of other infectious diseases already discussed, The acuteness and clinical activity level of amoebic disease can vary widely. Just as tuberculosis can be either very active and clinically debilitating, or latent and relatively inconsequential, amoebic infections can also range between dormancy and a very active infection. Alexander and Mullaney found equally high incidences of amoebic infection in two rural Tennessee communities. However, one of the communities was noted to be especially lacking in dietary vitamin and caloric content, and the acute amoebic infection with dysentery was found to be common. However, in the community with the higher quality diet, this acute presentation of amoebic infection was found to be rare. Elsden Dew observed Bantus, Indians, and Europeans living in the same community in South Africa, noting that amoebic infections affected the three races in different ways. The Bantus, who consume large amounts of maize, most typically have acute fulminating dysentery as a result of amoebic infection. The Indians, eating significant amounts of curry and rice, only rarely had acute dysentery, but often ended up with liver abscesses. The Europeans, with a much more balanced and full diet, rarely had severe amoebic infections. Elsden Dew, in comparing Africans from two different areas of the country, also found strikingly lower rates of amoebic dysentery among those with a multitude of vegetables in their diet. Fresh vegetables are a significant source of dietary vitamin C. Faust, et al., found that dogs fed only salmon would lose their resistance to being infected with amoeba. Recall that dogs can make some vitamin C, but the amounts produced are relatively little compared to an animal such as a goat. Apparently, having a diet that is chronically deficient in vitamin C can make a dog more prone to amoebic infection in spite of the dog's ability to internally synthesize limited amounts of vitamin C. A salmon-only diet will not supply very much vitamin C. When fed with raw liver and liver extract, the intestinal ulcers of dogs with amoebiasis tended to heal. Monkeys fed only raw milk showed either a reduction in intestinal amoeba count, or in some instances, a complete elimination of the infecting parasite. Those studies clearly demonstrate that adequate nutrition bears a direct relation to the severity of an amoebic infection. Although the most important nutrients cannot be precisely determined from that information, all of the diets mentioned that were associated with the less severe infections would be expected to have the higher amounts of vitamin C. Sadoun et al. Found that guinea pigs fed a diet deficient in vitamin C were especially susceptible to amoeba infection, even when the microbe count in the inoculating dose was decidedly small. Sadoun et al. Were able to demonstrate the relationship between vitamin C intake and the ineffectivity and virulence of amoebic infection even more definitively. In 43 guinea pigs fed a vitamin C deficient diet and inoculated with a given dose of amoebas, 87% developed intestinal lesions, and 100% died from the infection. However, in 48 guinea pigs fed the same diet plus a supplement of vitamin C, only 67% ended up with the infection, and only 27% eventually died from the infection. An indeterminate effect was seen in 19 guinea pigs fed a mildly scorbutogenic diet. The authors concluded that vitamin C deficiency made the amoebic infection much more severe. They also noted that the average time from inoculation to death among the vitamin C supplemented animals was about 33% longer than in the vitamin C deficient animals. Overall, the vitamin C deficient animals more easily contracted the amoebic infections, had more severe clinical courses, and died sooner than those animals given vitamin C. It would appear that amoebic dysentery is very responsive to the administration of fairly small doses of vitamin C. Larger doses, up to Klenner-sized levels, should be expected to have even quicker and more dramatic clinical responses. The symptoms of amoebic dysentery are definitely reversible by vitamin C administration, and a prompt curing of this disease is likely with high enough doses. Although hard evidence for a cure could not be found in the literature, the studies mentioned strongly imply that this is another infectious disease that should be preventable by large enough daily doses of vitamin C. This is suggested by the compelling relationship found between vitamin C deficiency and both the ineffectivity and severity of amoebic dysentery. Bacillary dysentery, curable and preventable. This is a syndrome of intestinal infection and inflammation caused by bacteria of the genus Shigella. Several strains of Shigella also produce bacterial toxins that further complicate the severity of the clinical pictures. The combined infectious, toxic nature of Shigella infections makes vitamin C an especially useful agent for treating this infection, whether alone or in combination with the more traditional antimicrobial drugs. Klenner reported great success in the treatment of this type of dysentery with vitamin C. He repeatedly found that vitamin C in 500 to 1,000 milligram doses given by intramuscular injection would readily cure this infection. He also noted that children having 10 to 15 bloody stools per day would clear up in 48 hours, and at the same time they would revert to normal feedings. Hanjo et al. Gave 11 monkeys small doses of Shigella. Of the 7 monkeys given no vitamin C for 20 weeks, 3 developed pronounced clinical dysentery in 4 to 12 days after the bacterial challenge. By contrast, none of the 4 control monkeys exposed to the same bacterial challenges, but who received vitamin C regularly, developed any signs of clinical dysentery. Interestingly, 2 of the 4 monkeys challenged with the bacteria and deprived of vitamin C developed severe scurvy during the observation period, with one of them dying. Perhaps individual susceptibilities among the monkeys determined whether the infection became pronounced because of the vitamin C deficiency. Also, the vitamin C deficiency could have developed into full scurvy because of the added stress of the bacterial challenge. This would appear to be analogous to the interactions between degrees of infection and degrees of vitamin C deficiency discussed earlier in the clinical course of rheumatic fever. Hanjo and Imaizumi looked at monkeys that died from natural dysentery, not experimentally produced. They found that the average vitamin C content of the adrenal glands was about 60% lower than in healthy control animals. Similarly, in animals with experimentally induced Shigella dysentery, adrenal gland content of vitamin C was decreased to about 55% of the normal control by the peak of the disease. Conversely, the average liver vitamin C levels of infected monkeys markedly rose relative to the healthy control animals. Perhaps the high concentrations of vitamin C normally found in the adrenal glands serves to some extent as a reservoir that acutely supplements other areas of the body in greater need of vitamin C. The liver is a primary site where toxins are neutralized, and vitamin C is a primary neutralizer of toxicity. Other investigators have documented that ACTH, an adrenal gland stimulating hormone, can also increase liver vitamin C content, as can exposure to a bacterial endotoxin. Perhaps many of the infectious diseases with a toxic component, such as some Shigella infections, will show this increase in liver vitamin C as long as adrenal stores of vitamin C are not already too depleted. It would appear that vitamin C is clearly capable of lessening the symptoms associated with Shigella infections. Klenner's work indicates this disease can probably be readily cured with adequate vitamin C. The ability of the Shigella infection to deplete adrenal vitamin C stores and fortify liver vitamin C stores, however, appears to be more of a non-specific reaction to an infectious disease, particularly one capable of producing a bacterial toxin as well. Certainly, the limited data found on the treatment of Shigella infections with vitamin C should at least warrant adding vitamin C to whatever other medications and supportive measures that are usually offered to such patients. Klenner's success also strongly suggests that regular optodoses of vitamin C should prevent Shigella from taking hold, unless the degree of acute exposure is very great. Pseudomonas infections, curable and preventable. Klenner had some experience in the treatment of Pseudomonas infections. Pseudomonas is a type of bacteria that appears most commonly in debilitated and weakened patients, and it is generally a very difficult infection to control and eradicate. Pseudomonas aeruginosa, a fairly common strain, is also associated with the production of a variety of toxins. Klenner saw Pseudomonas in association with severe burns. He asserted that either the toxin or the spread of the bacteria into the blood could result in the death of the patient. Klenner would spray a 3% vitamin C solution over the entire area of the burn every 2 to 4 hours for a period of roughly 5 days. He would also administer both oral and intravenous vitamin C. The intravenous vitamin C, in an amount of 500 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, was diluted to at least 18 cc's per 1,000 milligram of vitamin C in an injectable solution. The first injection was given as rapidly as a 20-gauge needle would allow. Repeat injections were given every 8 hours for the first few days, and then every 12 hours. The oral vitamin C was given to bowel tolerance in a fashion similar to that of Cathcart described earlier. Since large doses of vitamin C could lower calcium levels, 1 gram of calcium gluconate was also given daily. Klenner stated that under this regimen, Pseudomonas infection was not a problem. He also added that even when the burn was seen late in its course, a Pseudomonas infection that was already present would be destroyed within a few days, leaving a clean and healthy surface to the burned area and minimizing the chances of significant scarring. Carlson et al. Found that vitamin C worked well with nitrite in markedly inhibiting the growth of Pseudomonas aeruginosa in human urine. The authors asserted that their results might help to explain the benefits of vitamin C in the treatment and prevention of urinary tract infection. Rowell et al. Found that vitamin C could inhibit the growth of 16 different strains of Pseudomonas aeruginosa in the test tube. They also demonstrated that vitamin C worked well in enhancing the effects of a number of different antibiotics on the growth of Pseudomonas aeruginosa in culture. The authors demonstrated that vitamin C alone could cure mice infected with Pseudomonas aeruginosa, but less vitamin C was needed for a curative effect when erythromycin was added to the treatment. Finally, they were able to show that cystic fibrosis patients infected in their lungs with Pseudomonas aeruginosa were easily clinically controlled with a combination of vitamin C and antibiotic therapy. 4 of the 5 test patients wanted to continue the combination therapy at the end of the clinical trial, which further indicated the effectiveness of the therapy. Clinically, cystic fibrosis patients suffer a great deal with their lung infections. Rowell later showed that Pseudomonas aeruginosa cells became increasingly susceptible to the effects of 5 different antibiotics when exposed at the same time to vitamin C. Rowell and Charles showed that vitamin C worked well in vitro with the antibacterial agents sulfamethoxazole and trimethoprim in killing Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Nakanishi found that the topical application of vitamin C, along with antibiotics, ensured the absence of Pseudomonas aeruginosa from a treated bed sore. Vitamin C appears to be an excellent agent for the treatment of Pseudomonas infections, since it appears to eradicate the infection and neutralize any associated toxins. Furthermore, as these bacteria tend to infect only when the patient's immune system is compromised, an adequate daily dosing of vitamin C should prevent most Pseudomonas infections from ever starting. Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, RMSF, curable, preventable, ? This is an acute infectious disease that is sometimes fatal, caused by the bacteria Rickettsia rickettsii. Also known as tick fever, RMSF is usually transmitted by the bites of infected ticks. Clinically, RMSF is characterized by sudden onset, with fever lasting 2 to 3 weeks. A rash generally appears in the first week of illness, initially involving the peripheral parts of the body, and then gradually spreading inwards to the trunk of the body. Muscle soreness, severe headache, and extreme exhaustion are all associated symptoms. Smith reported that Klenner was an authority on treating RMSF because his medical practice was in an area of the country where infected ticks were often found. Smith wrote that Klenner treated an advanced case of RMSF with a dramatic clinical response. This patient had a 104.4 degree Fahrenheit temperature, a characteristic rash over the body, a positive blood test, and was in a coma when seen by Klenner. Klenner gave 30,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously every 6 hours. He also gave large oral doses of para-aminobenzoic acid, PAVA. The PAVA treatment schedule was 6,000 milligrams every 2 hours for 3 doses, then 4,000 milligrams every 2 hours for 12 doses, and finally 4,000 milligrams every 4 hours until the fever was gone for a full 24 hours. With this vitamin C PAVA treatment, this patient was conscious and rational within about 6 hours of starting treatment. The patient was sent home fully recovered on the 6th day. Klenner treated a 12-year-old girl with RMSF. She had a characteristic rash and a 105 degree Fahrenheit temperature. By the 3rd day, she was doing poorly in spite of PABA and chloramphenicol therapy. She was then given 30,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously, and in almost 2 hours, she was cheerful and responsive, seeming to be almost well. She continued to receive 30,000 milligram doses of vitamin C intravenously and was home and recovered within 7 days. Klenner also treated his son for RMSF. Even though his son was gravely ill, he eventually responded to vitamin C, vibromycin, and PAVA, recovering by the 4th day. With RMSF, Klenner found that the disease could always be reversed when vitamin C was given around the clock at the 500 to 900 milligram per kilograms of body weight level. It would appear that RMSF is another infectious disease that is readily curable by vitamin C, even though traditional therapies do not even assure survival. Preventing the disease by taking vitamin C is less clear, since a very large dose of the microbes can be delivered at the time of the tick bite. Typhus, not typhoid fever, is another infectious disease caused by Rickettsia bacteria. Zinser et al. Noted that the average guinea pig seemed to possess some resistance against typhus infection that limited the spread of the organism and led to almost invariable recovery of the animals. However, in animals fed on vitamin-deficient diets, the response to typhus infection was typically dramatic. Illness was severe and widespread, usually without a temperature rise and sometimes with a temperature drop, and death sometimes occurring without any of the clinical characteristics of a typhus infection. The authors noted that there was a historical association of high typhus mortality with war and famine, both of which would be associated with vitamin C and other nutrient deprivation. Staphylococcal infections, curable and preventable. Klenner did not address staphylococcal infections in any detail. However, he did report the prompt resolution of staphylococcus infections following intravenous injections of vitamin C in a dose range between 500 to 700 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, given through a 20-gauge needle as fast as the patient's cardiovascular system would allow. Rebera et al. Looked at 2 children with defective abilities of their white blood cells to kill bacteria. These 2 children were especially susceptible to repeated skin infections with staphylococcus. These authors reported that vitamin C was effective in delaying and suppressing infectious episodes. Nakanishi reported that the application of vitamin C directly in a topical fashion to a bed sore was able to remarkably enhance the bacteria-killing effect of antibiotics. Nakanishi also noted that Staphylococcus aureus, which had been antibiotic-resistant prior to the addition of vitamin C, subsequently disappeared from the wound. Lederman reported on the case of an elderly woman with an ulcer on her left cheek. Multiple treatments were attempted to heal this lesion. Cultures detected the presence of Staphylococcus aureus. After the ulcer had been present for over 3 years, even becoming larger, vitamin C therapy was initiated and healing was complete in several weeks. Lederman also noted that no signs of scurvy were observed. This is strong support for the importance of vitamin C in healing, especially when a pathogenic organism must be treated at the same time. Gupta and Guha were able to demonstrate an inhibition of the growth of Staphylococcus aureus at concentrations of vitamin C lower than that needed to inhibit certain diphtheria and streptococcal bacteria that result in clinical infections readily responsive to vitamin C therapy. Staphylococcal infections can also produce toxins that can magnify the severity of the clinical disease resulting from the infection. Kodama and Kojima were able to demonstrate the ability of vitamin C to render staphylococcus-related toxin harmless. Andreasen and Frank looked at infection-fighting white blood cells in broiler chickens. They found that the treatment of these white blood cells in the test tube with vitamin C significantly increased the ability of these cells to kill Staphylococcus aureus. In guinea pigs, Nelson et al. Showed that a sufficient dose of vitamin C, 375 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day, allowed burned animals to gain body weight and lower their metabolic rates in spite of being deliberately infected with Staphylococcus aureus at the time of the burn trauma. It would appear that clenor-sized doses of vitamin C should also be utilized in staphylococcal infections. As with a number of the other infectious diseases, vitamin C is especially valuable here, since it can neutralize bacterial toxins while eradicating the organism. As with so many of the other infectious diseases, vitamin C can always be used to optimize the performance of traditional antibiotic therapy. However, antibiotics can have very undesirable side effects, and vitamin C as a single-agent therapy should be considered if the attending physician feels that the patient is not so critically ill as to be possibly harmed by an antibiotic-free treatment. Because of its ability to cure staphylococcal infections, maintenance doses of vitamin C should be very effective in preventing such infections from taking hold. Trypanosomal infections, reversible and preventable, curable, ? Trypanosomal infections are due to a type of protozoa. Umar et al. Reported that a fairly small dose of vitamin C, 100 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, prevented the elevation in liver enzymes that otherwise attended the infections of rabbits with Trypanosoma brucei. The authors used this information to infer that the liver injury from this infection might be principally due to increased oxidative stress. Chagas disease is a trypanosomal disease that infects approximately 18 million people in Central and South America alone. Many of the cases are initially contracted because of contaminated blood transfusions. Ramirez et al. Found that the addition of vitamin C to the gentian violet treatment of collected blood deliberately infected with Trypanosoma cruzi before transfusion allowed sterilization with less gentian violet than is typically needed to achieve sterilization. Although the authors noted that gentian violet is already regarded as being free of serious side effects, they concluded that using vitamin C with it could minimize or eliminate the possibility of a cancer-causing side effect seen in some animal studies. Docampo et al. Previously concluded that vitamin C had a similar contribution to the sterilization of Trypanosoma cruzi-infected blood. Morais Souza and Bordin also reported that gentian violet, vitamin C, and light will effectively inactivate Trypanosoma cruzi present in donor blood. In guinea pig studies, Perla found that a fairly small dose of vitamin C, approximately 20 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, raised the natural resistance of this animal to Trypanosoma brucei infection. In the test tube, Strangeways found that vitamin C, along with glutathione, readily killed trypanosomes in culture.